The focus today is on poetry, on scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
Today we will feature Jody Tuohy. I'm Don Wooten, and along with Jody and myself and Roald, we'll have Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac on Scribble.
Jody, we've talked about having you on all the time. You've been involved in the writing scene throughout the Quad Cities in a variety of ways. But what really impelled us finally a couple of months ago was an article in the Argus, I believe, in which you said, "I've decided to become a full-time writer." And we've been discussing that off and on with the poets and other writers that we've had on. What does it mean to be a full-time writer? Here's an example. Alan Sigaris, whom you know, is a teacher who writes poetry. Robert Frost was a poet who teaches. What's the difference?
I think
just the amount of time, or is there a mindset that you underwent, a born-again experience, or what?
Yeah, I think it is a mindset, because I think it's primarily how you identify yourself as a writer or a teacher or whatever. And for me, as a full-time writer, that doesn't mean that I'm sitting down writing a novel 8 hours a day, but it's just that I've decided to devote my working time to things related to writing, which includes editing, formatting books, volunteering at the Midwest Writing Center, and in addition to writing poetry and novels.
So what does that do for your writing?
Well, it helps me to make connections with other writers, which helps me to learn and improve my craft. And then it also helps me to try to help other people who might want to write or are writing and need some help.
But couldn't you do that and do another full-time job?
I suppose you could if you were more ambitious and liked to work more than I do.
Well, no, I believe there is a difference, right? I mean, that it's sort of, well, it isn't exactly where your heart lies. A lot of people who have to work would rather be a poet.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that there is a dividing line that's more than just a little bit, well, starting tomorrow I'm going to be a writer.
Yeah, I had a divided life for a long time. I taught school for several hours and was on television for several hours and did the Genesee skill for several hours. And it was three separate things. And to this day, I don't know how I did it. But I don't know. It seems to me, I think maybe because I'm a more superficial guy, I like to skate along the surface of things. But if you get into something deeply, then that's what you do.
Yeah. My problem with being a writer, and that's another question I want to ask you, is whenever I had a big writing project, like writing the history of the Corps of Engineers, I would say, well, today is Thursday. I'm going to take the rest of the week off, and Monday I'm really going to start. But on Monday I would discover that, I don't have a pencil, or I don't have an eraser. Well, I'm going to start Tuesday, and then pretty soon it's Thursday, and I might as well start Monday again.
Right.
How do you discipline yourself, or does the love of writing do that for you?
Actually, I do that quite often myself. I get to Thursday, I'm like, oh, I got everything done for the week. I'm just going to start over fresh. But yeah, I use a calendar. I use an Excel calendar and then a to-do list to try to stay on task of what I want to get done. And as far as like working and being full-time, you certainly don't have to be a full-time writer to be a writer. Fortunately, I am married to someone who earns a good living, so I'm able to make so significantly less income and be able to do this
right.
Full-time.
Well, I think that's the key right there.
Mm-hmm.
As long as a child of the Depression, my first concern is always, is there enough money to live on
exactly.
this week?
Exactly, yeah.
But You know, what you write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do any prose at all?
I do. I have 3 novels out, and right now I'm concentrating, or from now on, I've decided to concentrate on historical fiction.
Oh, my. Well, we just talked to a historical fiction writer last week who wrote on ancient Troy.
Oh, okay.
Is your work more contemporary or closer to our own time?
It's closer to our own time. So my most recent book, what started it is the real tornado that happened in Comanche, Iowa on June 3rd, 1860. So that kind of spawns my story. So after the tornado, the main character, her fiance is missing. There's a murder and a new guy shows up and her parents die. So she has to raise her siblings. So it's more American. And my idea for the whole historical fiction series is to have several people related to my fictional family, the Sinke family, throughout different periods of history. So right now I'm working on the sequel to the tornado started book, and then I'm going to concentrate on when families camped along the Mississippi in Comanche in the early 1900s to harvest clams for the button industry. So,
do you anchor on one family? Is that it?
One family, like different members of that family are connected to that family, in-laws, or, you know, different people.
What's the fascination with historical fiction?
I've just always loved learning about how people lived in the past. I'm not so much interested in, like, the political history and how countries are formed and all that, but I do have a lot of interest in how people live day-to-day life. So my biggest influence probably is the Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House books. And I just always loved how not only did you get a good story with those, but you also got to kind of dip into the past and learned how they live life. So that's kind of my appeal, and I want to bring that through different eras.
How do you shift gears from prose to poetry and back again?
Well, poetry is kind of not something I regularly worked on. It's usually come through when I'm doing journaling or just something strikes me. So it's kind of a more of a, not so quite of a disciplined practice as my historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Except for my most recent poetry book,
Comes through is a very interesting phrase if you think about it. Where does it come from?
Where does the poetry come from?
Well, you say it comes through, right?
Right,
it
yeah.
Pops into your mind,
it does,
right?
Yeah. So a lot of times I'll be writing in my journal. I journal quite a bit. And I'm just writing thoughts, what pops in my head. And a lot of times I don't even realize I'm really writing a poem until I go back later and read it. And I say, hey, there's kind of a poem there. And I extract that out and make it into something. Except for my most recent book, when I did the Verse in Nature, that one I actually did set out to write poems because I went hiking and I took notes at the different state parks and then I came back and wrote poems.
Give us an example of your poetry.
You want me to read something?
Yes, I want you to read something.
All right.
Otherwise, I have to talk and all of us ask questions.
All right. Well, this poem is from my Verse in Nature, hiking Northwest Illinois and East Iowa State Parks, the one I was just talking about. And this is one I did when I walked or hiked Mississippi Palisades State Park in Savannah, Illinois, on Sunday, July 19th, 2015. I walk in the shadows of my grandfather's fatherless boyhood. We start on a shallow bridge, stone and wood on Sentinel Trail. We heed the rock climbing only sign, proceed left on the overlooked trail in thick midsummer shade. It's our first hike since the Montana mountains, but I'm okay to be back home, back to chores and work, back to real life, day-to-day blessings. Sunday joy motorcycle riders roar below on the Great River Road between Barker Bars and quaint main streets. He waits for me as he always does. Fluffy white insects like cottonwood seeds are disguised but purposeful in their flight. It's his legs today that are weak and stiff, difficult to coax up steep inclines, and as natural as they can be stairs. Not mine, although in short time my breath is brisk and ragged, sweat dripping down my forehead and over my cutter-numbed lips. Ferns grow thick and wild in the relative cool. We easily limbo a fallen tree. Like everywhere around here, the Mississippi River runs in the plant's roots, as in mine. In its words and wondrousness, we can adventure in solitude. We go up and up on pounded-down mud on the edge of a steep drop-off. Unlike Montana, the trees here are thick and constant, thanks to ample annual rains that keep them moist and mostly fire retardant. The Prairie View Trail, a side trip, circles a clearing growing raspberry shrubs and black-eyed Susans suckled by butterflies. The grass path is wet, moisture hangs, held captive by strong July sun peeking through thinning clouds. Standing on the highest point, I look across the clearing, rimmed by thick walnut, oak, and maple. I imagine my grandfather as a boy, chasing his brothers over the ridge to find the cool blue northern sky breeze. He wasn't much to reminisce about childhood. Too sad, I suppose. Better left behind. But I never asked, either. And like happens, I know it's too late. On the return on Sentinel Trail, we scare up wild turkey babies who carelessly fly away. At Sentinel Rock Overlook, a relieving breeze and expanded river views are flecked by grassy islands. Beyond, Iowa farms dot bright green hills sloping away from the bank.
That's a poetic narrative in a way.
I like your idea that your poems come to you often while you're journaling.
Yes.
That is the big shift that took place during my 39 years of teaching at Augustana. When I came in 1960, creative writing courses were caught. You learned to write. But by the mid-1980s, you wrote to learn.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And there was the big text that came out called Not Learn to Write, but Write to Learn. That the act of writing itself is where writing emerges. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you've said.
But that whole business of journaling, I have never kept a journal. I've never even thought about it. And I'm amazed to find that there are people like Jody who keeps a journal. Do you keep a journal?
I didn't until I got to that point. And I still don't really keep a journal. But, you know, so I used to sit trying to think of an idea sometimes for 8 hours in front of the typewriter. And in fact, if you start writing, right, writing is somehow in the act of writing, something comes through, as you said in your
getting
phrase.
That first sentence.
Yeah.
In the first sentence is like breaking through a stone barrier, but you get the first
but
sentence.
It will come to you in the act of writing. And it really does. That really does work. It took me a long time to get to the point where I could do that because so much of it was gibberish and stupid. This is really dumb, right? And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the dumb, wow, where did that come from, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, once I start writing, you force yourself to write something. And that'll pretty much, for me, determine the shape of what's going to follow.
Jody, where did that? Where was that book published?
I published this book.
You did?
Yep,
okay.
Myself. Yep.
Is that 918 Studio?
Nope, this is my own Wordsy Woman Press.
Okay, but don't you run 918?
Yes,
Studio?
Yes, I am with.
Tell
Lori.
Us a little bit
with
about
Lori
that.
Perkins, I run 918 Studio Press. So we're a selective subsidized publishing company, which is a new kind of business model. It's a hybrid between traditional and self-publishing. So it's like traditional publishing where we only publish very few selections, a couple
right.
a year. So you get that kind of a vetting process that traditional publishing
right.
gives you. But it's like self-publishing in that we ask for financial
right.
investment.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's
like a partnership.
Sort of like Ice Cube Press does a lot of books that way, the one in Lone Tree, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of model is beginning to take hold. It's amazing to see how the shape of publishing has altered over time. I decided this week to subscribe for a year to Publishers Weekly. Holy mackerel.
Yeah, it's a lot in that magazine.
But just regular publishing houses and self-publishing material and so on. The reviews in each week, I think, where are all these books coming from?
Last year, I just read statistics in the Christian Science Monitor, there were 700,000 self-published books in the United States and 300,000 published books by publishers.
Boy.
Unbelievable.
So in that field, how do you promote your material?
The usual ways that people do it are the authors that we've had so far, they do a lot of personal appearances. And, of course, we offer them for sale online. We have a website and Facebook page and mm-hmm. things like that. It's with any kind of marketing your books, we really look to at the specific book and author, what the book's reader where they are, how to communicate with them, and then also the author of what they're comfortable with doing and would like to do to help market their books.
Do you have many people approaching you to publish books?
We do. We are not actively, well, we're republishing one by Jane Rogers pretty soon, but we are actively seeking publications, but so far this year we haven't found one that we want to really get behind. So, but we are open for submissions.
Where do you seek them?
We just have an open submission process that people can email us what they, and we have a website, 918studiopress.com, and our submission guidelines tell what we need and what we're looking for.
Say that address again slowly so people can register.
918studiopress.com.
918studiopress.com.
Yes.
So, you know, among our listeners, I'm sure there are few authors that are just about ready to go.
Right. I think that's true. Do you have another poem you could read? I'm going to...
Sure, yeah. Let's see. I'll read.
Yeah, we have a couple minutes. That's it.
Okay, so I will do... I will do White Pines Forest State Park, also in Illinois. This one was hiked Sunday, May 17th, 2015. Trails named for squirrels red and gray. This time smart enough to bring DEET. Sloppy mud from recent rain shower. Cool burn on my neck from absorbing junior to ward off gnats. Thick brown oak leaf carpet imprisoned on steep hills by old square railroad ties. Blonde-hearted pines sapped and jutted, jagged into fluffy white and blue. By mid-April, severe weather. The pew-pew of birds and chirps mixed with my new sandals smacking in fresh mud and the rush of wheels on nearby asphalt. Purple blooms amid lush green, drinking up the spring rain with fervor, thirsty. Red squirrel trail marked by blue-tip painted posts. I smell of menthol and deep woods off. Gray squirrel trail is marked by green. A dead oak protects a clear sky view and allows bluegrass to grow on the trail. Grayed over by dried, splashed mud flecks. Dandelions grow to 2 feet where suburban dads don't battle for long control. Invisible spider hairs won't come off my arms. Knotted roots try to catch my feet. The air is thick with dew like I imagine Florida to be. On Whispering Pines Trail, a hollow tree is soot-covered, struck by lightning. The knotted limbs sometimes help, serving as nature's stairs. A delta of roots pushes out into the trail, giving the illusion of brown waves.
Very nice. Jody, we really appreciate you taking the time, and it's fascinating that you are operating in both fields, prose and poetry.
Thank you for having me.
And you were a full-time writer, huh?
Yep, that's how I identify myself.
Okay, there's something you can aspire to.
Yeah, well, I thought about it, but no, today is Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. Start over on Monday.
It's always Thursday.
I think what we'll do now is turn this over to Garrison Keeler. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Roald, have you ever tried writing poetry?
Yes. There once was a man named Don Wooten.
Oh, stop it.
Well, I'm getting more requests for more of those, so maybe more of them will be coming.
All right, fella. I'll get some limericks for
you, too. All right,
okay.
You're on.
You're on.
I wish I could write poetry. I love to read poetry. I think all people are poets, and then I sit down and it's clunky.
The thing that knocks me out is the sheer power of words. You know, you think they're just words. They're words, but they're put together in such a way as to just knock your socks off. And in some cases, it's the sound of the sentence. In others, it's the thought behind it. I don't think I'll ever get over the thing I cite over and over again. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What a profound sentence that is. And, you know, Shakespeare just tosses those off one after another.
I know.
It depresses me.
Well, I love to, you know, when you said the power of words, what popped into my mind is I'm just reading a book by Anne Lamott, but Anne Lamott's books all begin with a poem by someone else. And the poem that begins this book is by Liesel Mueller, who's a Illinois poet. And it's called Monet Refuses the Operation. And, you know, people have said Monet paints the way he did because he had cataracts and other eye problems that made his everything look fuzzy. Mm-hmm. And this is Monet responding to the doctor's request to operate. He's saying, you know, you asked me to operate. It took me my whole life to see halos around the lights and to see that islands are merely the lost children of continents. And, you know, and it's just a haunting poem.
Yeah.
I don't mind not writing as long as I get to read stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. There's more good material to read than I will ever be able to even think of.
Well, 300,000 books published last year in the United States. Not all of them are probably good, but way more than you and I are ever going to even begin to touch to read.
You occasionally read a book and you think, everyone has to read this. You've got to read this to understand what's going on, who you are, where we are. And you know it's not going to happen, but dear me, books can really do it. Books that are well-researched, books that are well-written. We have a couple of minutes. Do you have any books you want to recommend?
Well, we've used up too much time for me to recommend the books I want to recommend. I'll do that next time. But let me tell you about a book that another book that Nan Carter sent me, called The Book of Not, N-O-T, and it's by an author whose name is Tsitsi Darangemba. The main character, it's an African book. The main character is Tambu, a native in Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, in the last days of Rhodesia as it gradually becomes Zimbabwe. She's been given a scholarship to a young ladies' college, the College of the Sacred Heart, and be given the best of education. She and 20 other young blacks there with the whites. They're segregated from the whites, of course, and they stay in a different dorm. But she's being taught the proper way of living, the proper education, the proper literature, the proper this and that, in a world that soon isn't going to exist. Yeah. It's going to become Zimbabwe. In fact, her brother and her other relatives are involved in the revolution that takes Rhodesia away from the whites. So she's being trained for a lifestyle that is going to disappear. And again, it's one of those books that, what an age of turmoil we live in. Maybe we always have. Maybe we just closed our eyes to the fact that the world has always been in turmoil. We've always been immigrants. Immigrants to a different lifestyle, immigrants to a different way of looking at things. We're all restless and trying to move on, and there doesn't seem to be any place to move.
Well, it's one of those situations where life around us is fairly placid. The name of the book again?
The Book of Not.
Book of Not. Okay, thank you very much, Roald, and thank you for listening. Roald Tweet and I'll be back with you next week, and we hope you'll join us for the next edition of Scribble.